Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Last evening, Preservation Oklahoma with the Tulsa Foundation of Architecture announced their 2016 list of the state's most endangered places. The list includes our state capital in Oklahoma City, along with two locations in Tulsa: the Oklahoma Iron Works building just north and east of downtown, and the mid-century Abundant Life building at 18th and Boulder. The 10 sites listed are not the only historic preservation and endangered in the state. With the state's $1.3 billion shortfall, the Historic Preservation Tax Credit, which has helped spur the revitalization of downtown Tulsa and Oklahoma City, as well as other structures in Oklahoma cities and towns, could be in danger as well. We'll receive an update on the status of the tax credit, along with more about the endangered places list, with David Pettijohn, the Executive Director of Preservation Oklahoma, and Amanda DeCourt, the Executive Director of the Tulsa Foundation of Architecture. The two groups held a joint event last evening at the Tulsa Fire Alarm Building, which once was on the endangered places list and now has been renovated, to announce this year's site of the most endangered historic places in Oklahoma. Amanda and David, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Last night, your two organizations unveiled the Oklahoma's Most Endangered Places for 2016. And some of them apply here in Tulsa. Some of them are major icons, like the state capitol, which,
yes,
as we've watched the work that hasn't gone towards fixing the state capitol, it's on the endangered site. David Pettijohn, give us an overview of what you chose for the 2016 list.
Well, a little background. We solicit these nominations from the public. So we reach out, you know, to our network across the state and ask what buildings in your communities are most at danger of disappearing. So we have a nomination form, and those are submitted. And then we bring together a group of preservation professionals, including architectural historians, statewide leaders. Amanda serves on that committee as well. We have historians, those involved in the preservation field. And then they go through the nominations and they select them. And like you said, last night we had our big unveiling at the Tulsa Fire Alarm Building. This is our 23rd list. Our very first list took place in 1993. So as we look through the buildings and the structures and other items that are included on this list, the big question is why? You know, why are they important? Well, they're in danger, you know, plain and simple, either through apathy, either through lack of funding. These historic markers are in danger of disappearing. And what this list does, it provides these local communities the awareness needed to generate that community support, as well as raising the necessary funds to properly restore them. That's kind of how the list came about.
Now, there are two Tulsa structures mentioned, one specifically, one sort of by association.
Right.
The Oklahoma Iron Works building. Amanda, what's the importance of that particular structure?
That is actually a really fascinating structure. The entire complex, we know it as Evans Fin Tube.
Okay, right.
So when you hear Oklahoma Iron Works, retrain your brain.
We all know Evans Fin Tube.
Yeah, we need to stop calling it Evans Fin Tube, because the story is so much deeper than that.
And we always hear it as a prime site for redevelopment.
Right.
Now, redevelopment could mean...
It's
raising
a prime
it?
Site for redevelopment using historic tax credits to repurpose a pretty significant and important building. And we don't always think of our industrial buildings as important, but they are. And if you think about all of the steel that was produced at Oklahoma Iron Works, mm-hmm. I would say that all of our skyscrapers built in downtown Tulsa have steel that came from that foundry in them. I mean, it's a huge piece of our past, and it's also... pretty fascinating.
So how do you creatively use an iron foundry that maintains the integrity of the structure?
It's a great space. I know that a lot of people are familiar with Raw Space, the maker space project that was hoping to be able to get in on that site. But you just have to be creative. That's the thing about preservation. It takes a little bit of vision. We've seen other examples where historic structures that are industrial have been reused for open concept office or for public market, or wouldn't it be cool to have the farmer's market in there permanently. You know, there are a lot of things that can be done. It just takes a tiny bit of vision.
I'm thinking of, like, on 6th Street, the old, it was an oil area. It's a brick oil facility. And I want to say Sinclair. I'm not sure if that's exactly who it was, but it's now been repurposed as offices.
There are two, the Tull Oil building.
Tull Oil, and that's it.
That has office in it. And then there's another across the street that Seltzer Schaefer Architects moved in. And made it their own. We're seeing a lot of industrial buildings because they have big open spaces utilized for modern, flexible office uses. So that's fun. A lot of the old office buildings are repurposed into housing because their floor plans and their setup allows for that.
Now, the Oklahoma Iron Works building, or Evans Fin Tube, is one site on the list. The other is, again, more general. It's mid-century architecture. And right now, this is sort of the orphan in architecture. Mid-century has its devotees, but for a lot of people, they see the building and says, that's an ugly building and let's tear it down.
Right. And that's full of asbestos. Get rid of it.
And that's also true. And one building that is a focus of the mid-century architecture on the list is the Abundant Life building at 18th and Boulder. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what's important about this building? Because right now it is in sad shape.
It is in very sad shape because no one knows what to do with it. And there are other issues with the building. It was owned by an out-of-state property owner for a long time who didn't do anything with it. It takes a lot of vision to look at a building, no pun intended. It takes a lot of vision to look at a building with no windows and figure out a use for it. People who've worked in the building for a long time, you know, hated working there because you never saw daylight. So what kind of use can we find that would keep the historic fabric of the building and allow it to be repurposed? If you look at old pictures of the building when it was in good shape and when it was properly illuminated, they had some great lights on it. That diamond pattern in the exterior is fantastic. So it used to be gorgeous. Believe it or not.
Now, that may not be the best example of mid-century architecture to my mind. And I think that gets into a sort of a heart of a question about historic preservation. Is it about preserving everything or the best examples of mid-century architecture or Art Deco? Now, certainly we tore down lots of beautiful Art Deco buildings that we didn't appreciate the building, the beauty of the building at that particular point. Is that what we have to keep in mind?
Well, you know, when you look at historic preservation, and Amanda kind of touched on this, you're right. There are, you know, these examples that are out there. And one of the reasons why mid-century architecture was chosen for this year's list are some of the design elements that we just discussed, that there are those challenges out there and kind of what is a great representation of that and kind of having that vision. And when we talk about what is considered historic and what is not considered historic, when you look at the preservation field, kind of the general thought process, and Amanda can jump on this as well, is in that parlance, you kind of look at the National Register of Historic Places. You know, is it eligible or is it already listed? And there are set criteria that is placed on it. So as you look at specific buildings and does it meet specific criteria, these buildings on this list meet that. And as we look at, you had brought up the Oklahoma Iron Works building. And Amanda was talking about all these different uses for it. And as Amanda goes out and I go out and we talk about what is the purpose of this building and the challenge is, one of the terms that we use quite often is adaptive reuse. Just because a building was a foundry does not mean it has to stay a foundry. And just because a building was a warehouse doesn't mean it has to stay a warehouse. So it's showing those examples that are out there that these buildings can have new life, because that's exactly what these buildings are. They are breathing structures. You know, in Oklahoma City, the Ambassador Hotel, which is one of our newest historic hotels, was a medical supply building and a medical office building. And now it's this great boutique hotel. So there are all of these great opportunities out there. But kind of back to your question, what do we consider historic and not historic? It kind of goes back to that criteria.
Yeah. And when you talk about mid-century architecture, you're looking at a whole range of architecture in our city, for example, everything from the Lortondale neighborhood, which you have owners that really love their houses and are fixing them up true, but oftentimes they renovate them, which sort of destroys the character of the house. Also, in Midtown Tulsa, you have all this post-war housing, which is now being raised for McMansion-style houses on these big lots. That's an issue as well?
Absolutely. you know, it's interesting to me. I just got back from Las Vegas. I was there with the National Alliance of Preservation Commissions for actual work. It wasn't all fun. And we toured the Neon Sign Museum, their boneyard, and talked about preservation of those giant neon signs. And think about how different Tulsa would look today if we hadn't decided that, you know, neon was no good, if we'd kept all of our neon. And they also built a few years ago an absolutely enormous civic building that is straight up fake Art Deco. It's the strangest thing. Only Las Vegas could pull this off. It looks like it was WPA era Art Deco built in the 60s, but it was actually like 2007. It's very strange. But that's not authentic. That's not real. That's fake old. So authenticity is very...
Which goes along with Las Vegas.
Which goes along with Las Vegas. So I guess for them it is. So a little bit of a circle there. But people like the real deal. They like the authentic thing. They like seeing buildings repurposed.
There's nothing like walking through the lobby of the 320 South Boston building, for example.
Right.
You know,
There's nothing like it. Yeah. We're not going to build those murals today because we're not Las Vegas. And I'm okay with that. But it's a question of authenticity. Another thing that comes to mind often is sustainability. I'll give a little plug. My friends at the Tulsa Preservation Commission are partnering with Sustainable Tulsa and AIA on Thursday night. Their speaker series is at Synergy on Thursday night, and they're talking about sustainability and how that plays into historic preservation. So tearing everything down to build a new green building, you just removed a green building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've already spent the energy to build it in the first place. Yeah.
Not everything that's old is good. Not everything that's old is worth keeping around.
Right.
But we really want to build on what we already have.
And just to follow up real quick on the mid-century, you know, discussion, a lot of people are alive today that saw those being built.
Right.
And so it's kind of one of those things of considering yourself historic. and it's not just here. You know, I was at the National Trust Conference in Savannah a while back, and I went on a tour, and I was talking to their director out there as we were kind of getting a tour, and they're trying to get these homes that are mid-century into that historic preservation zoning. And they're getting a lot of resistance because they said historic preservation is downtown.
Yeah,
that's what's historic.
It's 1790.
Yeah,
it's
that's, not, you know, not here things built in the 1950s. So this is something that is happening everywhere.
Well, David yes. Pettyjohn, tell us about the other structures that are on preservation.
I'll just kind of give you a quick list. Last year was the 80th anniversary of the passing of the Works Progress Administration, and a lot of buildings across Oklahoma, through stadiums, schools, were all, were all constructed. So we had it on the list last year, and we continued it this year because there's still the need. And this year, for our focus, we chose the Chandler Memorial School Building, which is a beautiful WPA, their old high school, that is in need of restoration. We also have the Apukshanubi District Choctaw Chief's House down in Swink. I practiced that, I have to tell you. But it was built in the 1830s. The legend has it that it was part of the treaty that the Choctaws signed when they were removed from their ancestral homelands, that they had to build a house for each of the three district chiefs. And this was built for Thomas LaFleur. So it's privately owned. Well, not private, but, you know, there's a local group. And they are needing assistance, you know, financial assistance for its upkeep. So that's why that was selected. And then we have the First National Bank building in Stratford, which is a stunning structure. And it's a classic example of Main Streets, you know, where here is a wonderful building that is being underused, really needs some of that support, you know, local support as well as financial support. And you have a small group of volunteers that are really just trying to make an effort. Then we have the Vanerson Homestead out in Eric. Several homestead structures, dugouts, one of the last remaining out in Beckham County in far western Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
And then we always have an archaeological aspect to our list. And these are rock shelter sites, you know, statewide that are, you know, just some shelters that are kind of in caves or other areas that are open to vandalism.
Uh-huh.
And then we have, of course, you had mentioned the Oklahoma State Capitol. There's a lot of progress being made. However, more funding is needed, and that is taking place to continue with the interior work. The Quanah Parker Star House down in Cache, Which is on our list again.
And it's called the Star House because there's actually stars on the roof.
Yeah, the rumor is that Quanah Parker saw generals in the United States military and saw their stars. And so why do they have stars? And they said it was because they're important. He says, well, I'm important too. So he painted those big white stars on top. And then the last one, I'll just talk briefly about this. Route 66, Oklahoma has the largest stretch of Route 66, longest stretch in the entire route. And we're focusing on one area in particular, and that is between Hydro and Bridgeport, which is just west of Oklahoma City.
And you can still see that road along I-40.
Yes, you can. Yeah. Yes, you can. And one of the things that is happening is there is an effort to really dismantle a lot of the historic bridges along Route 66 due to a perceived safety issue. And the Pony Trust Bridge, which is right along that stretch, is probably the most significant bridge all along Route 66, we have been told. And it's the longest one. You know, it's incredibly long. It goes over the Canadian riverbed. And what's remarkable about it is when you're heading from east to west, which was the traditional route, that is your first sign that you are entering a different portion of the journey. You see the plains.
Right.
And there are plans to reroute a part of it and potentially remove that bridge.
Because it's perceived as unsafe.
Yes, due to increased traffic and its close proximity to I-40. Because they say, well, if there is a natural disaster or something that takes place on I-40, we have to move people north. Well, our argument is if it's something that large, it's going to impact that as well. So fortunately, we have a lot of great communication with the Department of Transportation, so we have our fingers crossed that we're going to be able to, to save that
hopefully
bridge.
The plan will be to maybe reroute traffic onto a new bridge.
Yes,
but
further,
you keep that,
further north. Absolutely.
But you keep that bridge there as a sort of a tourist
yes,
view.
Yes, absolutely.
Sort of thing. Well, that is the list for 2016 list of Oklahoma's most endangered historic places. My guests today are David Pettyjohn from Preservation Oklahoma and Amanda DeCourt, the Executive Director of the Tulsa Foundation of Architecture, who joined together to announce the list last night. Very quickly, past preservation lists, what is the track record of actually saving the structure, and how often do we actually lose the structure?
A few things about these buildings and the ones that have been on the list. When we have an exhibit that we actually put together. It was unveiled last night at the Tulsa Fire Alarm Building. And as I said last night, this is really the beginning of a conversation because that exhibit will travel the state. We will take it out so people can learn more about the importance of these buildings.
And you mentioned the fire alarm building. That was on the list at one point.
Yes, yeah. And that's an amazing building that has been saved through the hard work of Tulsans, Marty Newman, and now through the work of the Tulsa Fire Museum. So as you look at the success rate, you know, how do we kind of measure success? And we look at two clear components. The first one is community support. Community support is critical for the success. So we look at the Alice Robertson House. There was actually a fundraiser last night. Mary Alice Robertson, the very first female elected in the state of Oklahoma to the House of Representatives, Muskogee. Well, this was her last home. And a group of volunteers, the Founders Place Historic District, it was on our list last year. They rallied the community. They purchased the home. And now they're in the process of saving it. So that's definitely a success. When you look at the Mayo Hotel, which was on our very first list, successful Skirvin Hotel, the Saline Courthouse. But unfortunately, we've lost quite a bit this last year in Oklahoma City. In the last 2 years, several significant structures. Stage Center was lost, was on a previous list. Union Bus Station in that entire block. The last remaining intact portion of our Main Street was lost. So we have a very good track record, but unfortunately, we've lost quite a bit.
What about some of the structures in rural areas where there just may not be the economic base to make changes? I'm thinking of someplace like the Eastern Oklahoma Tuberculosis Sanitarium, which was on last year in Tallahassee.
It was,
or Chilocco,
yes.
Indian School.
Chilocco is, yeah, that has been on our list several times. And sometimes there are factors that are out there that really present a challenge. I know Chilocco, there are multiple tribes involved. There's an alumni association that's really actively working with them. So that's why you had mentioned there are some times that we keep them on the list to help them achieve that. But you were right. There are some challenges out there. But Preservation Oklahoma, we contact all of the owners and we offer our services and stay in touch. And working with partners like Amanda up here in Tulsa is also a great benefit.
Well, if I can change our discussion to one of the devices that helps save a lot of these buildings, the historic preservation tax credits. How important has this been in, say, for example, Tulsa's downtown, Amanda?
I would say the historic tax credit program has been absolutely a game changer for downtown Tulsa. It's been huge. If you think about everything that's happened since in the last 10 years, you know, we rolled the sidewalks up at 4:45 p.m. so that everyone could beat the non-existent rush hour to get out of downtown. That was downtown Tulsa in 2005. And in 2015, we are really making great strides towards having a 24-hour downtown where people live. I don't want to do the cliched live, work, and play thing, but that's what's actually happening, which is fantastic to see. And almost all of those new living units downtown have happened because the property has been redeveloped using historic tax credits. Almost all of the hotels as well, the Atlas Marriott, certainly the Mayo Hotel where people also live, those are historic tax credit projects. And it really runs the gamut all the way down to the recently finished Coliseum Apartments and the Vandiver Lofts where a lot of young professionals are living. And we need that. We need a diversity of housing options downtown.
Now, certainly it's had its effect in downtown Tulsa. What is its status in the legislature? Because with the $1.3 billion shortfall, all tax credits have been on, well, all except maybe energy tax credits have been on the table.
On the chopping
block. But what is the status at this point? I assume both of your groups are lobbying to keep this in place.
Absolutely. Interestingly, there was a bill filed that would have created essentially a partial repeal of the tax credits again. And they're required to file what the financial impact of that would have. And I looked on that form that was filed with that bill, and the impact to the state's budget was somewhere around $3 million over 2017 and 2018 and $0 in 2016 for our current hole. So if you think about the enormous deficit that we're currently facing, this is a drop in next year's budget.
Yeah.
But lately, there have been a number of bills introduced, and none of them have made it into final form. They have all died. But it's been quiet. I would say too quiet. I think we will probably see something coming out of the House before this term, before this session of the legislature is up.
Well, let me give you some pushback from the late David Dank, who was not fond of any tax credits, but especially not fond of this one in particular. You know, he was always fond of saying something like, what is the economic development of a historic renovation? You know, you put a restaurant in there and it employs some cook and wait staff at minimum wage. It doesn't have any real economic benefit to the tax base. What is the benefit of renovating a historic building? I would assume there are people paying higher property tax.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's a increment measure, so it eventually starts paying higher property tax. But what are the economic benefits to the state for keeping this tax credit in place?
We actually get a really good return on our investment. And I would say, with no disrespect to the late Mr. Dank, that those cooks need jobs too, and so does the guy who is parking your car for you while you go eat at the Atlas Marriott in one of their restaurants, which is sales tax, alcohol tax, and then you stay the night there, and there's some hotel motel tax. That project in particular paid for itself in very short order. But as a whole, you know, we've been working on an economic impact study with Don Ripkema and Brianna Grosicki from Place Economics. That's a national, actually international economics firm, and they do this stuff all the time. Tulsa Foundation for Architecture has hired them to create an impact study for the entire state to see, is this tax credit paying for itself? Is it working? Is it doing what it set out to do? And what they've figured out so far is over $415 million in rehab expenditures since the program began.
And just the actual act of rehabbing the building is putting all sorts of...
Just the act of rehabbing buildings.
Yeah, right.
$415 million in expenditures and, $520 million in total project costs since 2001. So these buildings would still be sitting there, and the only people living in them would be, well, actually, no one would be living in them. There might be some pigeons. and that's 77 buildings since 2001 have been rehabbed in the state of Oklahoma. We're at over $155 million in qualified rehab expenditures in Tulsa. Those are the ones that have been finished, and that says nothing about all the projects in the pipeline.
And there are a lot in
the
pipeline.
So that's a lot of construction jobs. And that is also a whole lot of permanent jobs after the project is completed and the building is put back into service. As opposed to being a drain on the taxpayers, it contributes, again, to our economy.
We know the impact here in downtown Tulsa. Right. What about the impact around the state? Has it had a big impact?
Yes, it has. Currently, as a matter of fact, this year, there are 76 historic rehab projects in 26 cities, across the state. One of the things that we hear a lot is that they really only benefit Oklahoma City or Tulsa, the large, urban areas, but that is not the case. When you look at Enid, there's the Cherokee Apartments that is for, housing. Clay Hall up there, which is also for senior housing. Projects like this take place all across, Oklahoma. Stroud, McAllister, Sulphur, I'm just kind of naming several of these off. And as we talk about what Amanda was saying, those specific dollar figures, but there's also something, what is the price you place on your heritage? This is what makes a town unique, their historic buildings.
You mentioned Sulphur. I'm assuming you're referring to the Sulphur Hotel.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, and this is sort of like the iconic building in
these
the town.
These are, the buildings reflect the community. It's part of their community fabric. It's a part of their past. And also, it leads to a creative economy. The National Trust for Historic Preservation recently did a study through their Green Lab that looks at diverse neighborhoods in urban centers and about those diverse architectural styles in those smaller spaces that brings in local businesses and really creative economy. And we have it here in Tulsa, in the Brady District and the Blue Dome District, in Oklahoma City and the Plaza District. And those are the very popular places, taking place.
And you're starting to see that with, I think, the next emerging neighborhood, it's the Pearl. I mean, the Pearl, every time I drive through the Pearl, it's, hey, that building, there's somebody working on that building.
And there are several historic tax credit projects that have happened in that district. Actually, the 6th Street Commercial Historic District was the first one we listed in the National Register that was a commercial district. Mm-hmm. And we just saw the big announcement last week about the development that's about to happen in the East End of downtown, where the Snyder family is purchasing a lot of the Nordam properties and redeveloping them. I got a lot of pushback when we did that National Register nomination. I said this is a tool that we could use to help bring this district back to life. And sure enough, fast forward 5 or 6 years, what do you think is going to make that development happen? Historic tax credits. Mm-hmm. So it's not just the big buildings, and we're seeing it in all these little towns across the state. Okmulgee has been doing amazing things in their downtown using historic tax credits. One of the Okmulgee Main Street board members has actually taken on a building herself, and she's now 19 months into a 24-month project.
The McBrayer Building.
The McBrayer Building.
Yes.
So this is not just big developers. This is your average Joe. I want to make a difference in my community.
I want to save that building. I want to make money off of it, too.
And I want that whole block to be stabilized so that other people are comfortable investing in buildings next to. You don't have the eyesore anymore. That makes it safe for everybody else to start redeveloping.
Every day we're seeing the results of the historic tax credit here in our city as well.
Absolutely.
Amanda and David, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
David Pettyjohn is the Executive Director of Preservation Oklahoma. Amanda DeCourt is the Executive Director of the Tulsa Foundation of Architecture. The two groups joined together at the Tulsa Fire Alarm Building to announce this year's list of Oklahoma's most endangered historic places. To learn more about the list, visit preservationok.org or the Foundation for Architecture at tulsaarchitecture.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.